Thank you for allowing me to share some of my experiences in using business process analysis and some of the concepts for looking at biosurveillance in various venues. What I like about the slide is it really thinks about the continuum of what we're going to need for biosurveillance. Oftentimes, we're thinking about the incident, whether it's a reportable condition, whether it's an injury, whatever the effect, and we're really working within that monitoring, investigating, intervening aspect. But biosurveillance also includes response activities, and what are we needing before there's an event? What kind of systems need to be in place? And so if we think along this continuum, we have a better appreciation of what kind of information we will need as we move through the continuum. Right now in Boston, our cell phones are abuzz, messages are flowing, Irene is coming for the weekend, and that's the hurricane. Whether it hits us or not, we are in that pre-incident phase. As part of this process, we've been communicating back and forth, and I have my epidemiologist and my data person who runs our syndromic surveillance thinking about what sort of syndromes do I need to deploy should Irene hit, so that we can be monitoring and what are the fail-safe mechanisms that will need to be in place to make sure these systems are available should the hurricane come to Boston. And so I think as we think about biosurveillance, it's not just about event detection. We need to think about the continuum of what is the response and how this informs response management and what needs to be done to inform decision makers about what happens for resources and the status of the community as we move through events. So that's what I really like about this way of thinking about biosurveillance along the continuum. I've had the opportunity to participate in the ISDS process for determining the core requirements for syndromic surveillance. And out of this process, we identified information around the treatment facilities, health indicators, patient demographics. There are different ways of categorizing the information. Some were required, some were optional. There were no more than 32 data elements identified. Some are required for sending a message via HL7. They're your header indicators. But through this business process, state and local health experts in syndromic surveillance came together to discuss how we use information. Argue? Yes, Mike Coletta there, he was the chair. Some days it was really a long day. What were the processes? What were the most valuable information? And what were the commonalities between all of us in developing syndromic and using syndromic surveillance? So these are a series of questions I always think about. And for me, the first one is, what is the goal of any system? What do I want it to be doing? And then we work backwards. So the first question you ask is, what data do you need to accomplish your goal? In syndromic surveillance, we had some practice elements, and there are others, but we identified age. And if you're going to just take age, you really need those age units. There's a real big difference between somebody who's 24 years old and 24 weeks. And so this was a critical piece to always be considering. Age was considered not date of birth because date of birth in many jurisdictions is an identifiable HIPAA element and had other problems with it, so the compromise was to request age and age units. Gender, zip code, state, race, visit time, date and time, and the use of time became critical because some interesting work had been done by Florida using the time of the visit to identify clusters. And that was proving to be a really valuable effort. And then chief complaint, reason for visit. Very helpful. Without that, it's really hard to determine. And then you got to step back and think, what are your data sources? So as we're going to move forward and struggle with reportable conditions and other sources of information that public health may need for biosurveillance, we've got to think about where is it going to come from. Not everything is in electronic health records. And it will be problematic for providers to collect all of the risk factor information and other data elements that we routinely collect in public health. It is unlikely that a healthcare provider will ever do a food history for you. So we need to think about where are the likely sources of information and what other systems of information that are electronic that we can begin to access. A critical piece of information is the evolving use of electronic trip sheets by emergency management services. Public health has the opportunity to receive information before people actually get to the healthcare environment. And these will be critical in events, but also in a day-to-day usage. So for example, if you were to come to Boston for the Boston Marathon, and you wanted to ask us, what was the impact of the marathon on your healthcare system? This year, 60 people were transported by Boston EMS to our emergency room departments. On a given day, that's not a big blip. And you're going to see, you'll say, well, probably not so much. There was a little bit of increased activity, but nothing they couldn't handle. Over 1,000 people were seen at the finish line medical tent. They were receiving intravenous hydration, treatment for hyperthermia, hypothermia, nebulizer treatments. If that tent is not there, they're going to be going to our hospitals. So to understand healthcare system impact of this kind of event, you really need to understand in a location what the impacts of this out-of-care provisions are, what are the alternative care sites, what else is going to become available. You want to look at school absenteeism systems. Inspectional service reports are also going electronic. So can we begin to communicate with them in the virtual world? There are other public health systems. We have environmental, communicable disease, and case management. Having these systems communicate together will be very helpful in streamlining and improving efficiencies. And then GIS, extremely valuable in understanding disease patterns and activity in domains. This is an example of what we're thinking about in Boston. It involves primary collection versus secondary collection. Secondary collection is your provider collects information and then you're going to reuse what they've collected for public health. Primary we're defining as your public health nurse or your inspectional services department goes out and actually collects data and it's data entered. We have a new requirement in Boston regarding nail salons. And it came about because we were receiving reports of significant infections requiring hospitalization, long-term intravenous antibiotic therapy related to nail salons, having your pedicures and manicures. And then the environmental health teams went in there, and it was pretty scary. And they used the same chemicals, and I did not know this, as auto body shops. And so the management and the use of the chemicals and the worker safety and infection control practices were all beginning to impact. So as part of this process, there is a disease environmental health data system that collects information about environmental hazards related to nail salons. But as part of that, there is a reporting requirement of infections and injuries following pedicures and manicures. And that's in my shop. And we're putting that into our disease surveillance system. The goal, as outlined by our CIO, is to have these two systems talking to each other. So I can pull off from the environmental health data system critical elements that they found in their inspections that I can then use in the investigations and the types of information we are collecting on nail salons. And so together, we can improve the environment for these businesses, keep them in business, and then provide a safe experience for customers when they have their pedicures and manicures. And it's very big business. So what methods can we use? There's HL7, And we're spending a lot of time talking about that. But remember, not all data sources use HL7. And that's really critical. Your school system's not likely to use HL7. So I think, you know, when we're thinking about this, we're all going, oh, HL7, 2.3, 2.5, CCD, CDA, whatever. But a lot of maybe our critical systems are not going to be using HL7. So as part of our planning and business process, how can we receive them? SFTP, CSV files, Excel spreadsheets. Sometimes you get stuff by email, and it may not be identifiable information, but it could be a spreadsheet about locations. And then there's the tried and true method of data entry, and I'm really trying to avoid doing a whole lot of that because it is no longer efficient. And if we can figure out how to maximize these exchanges and not be so wedded to one type, given all our information needs, we'll be in a better position to maximize the utility of all of this information. What tools do we need? For receiving electronic data, you've got to have mapping systems to move the data from one system to another, storing and holding data. You've got to have the data warehouses, data marts. These are not cheap, and public health should be investing in this. We need systems for processing data, because the end product is, if we're collecting data and nobody knows how to use it, and we don't have the tools to be using it, that's a cost with no benefit. And will we be in a really tight position when something happens and then providers say, well, I'm sending you the data, we just don't know how to use it. We need analytics, natural language programming, that includes negation. Systems for using information, decision support and visualization. And this has huge workforce impacts. It's not just about IT. It's making sure that your end users have the skills and the capacity to use information in the 21st century with visualizations and analytics that they will prompt people to take action. And that's a training need that we have all over public health. And it is a large gap in schools of public health that is not being addressed. Some public health considerations, some data is just not available. And keeping in mind that unknown values have limited utility. So we need to be, sometimes the right answer is going to be to key people, executive decisions, whatever, we can't collect that. Because the cost of collecting it and the likelihood of collecting it is not there. Additional processing steps add to the cost. So for syndromic surveillance, we've been looking at measured temperature versus reported fever. Is one better than the other? Some very interesting work that recently has been done indicates that when people come in and they say, I have a fever, it's a really good marker and maybe better than measured temperature. Why is that? Well, if you're sick or you're in the nursing home or you have a child, you call the pediatrician, they say, give them baby Motrin and go to the emergency room. By the time they arrive at the emergency room, they no longer have a measured temperature. But they did have one before. And so this may be a really, and to do that, to take your measured temperature and convert it into a fever measure requires a little bit of extra code. It's not a lot of code, but that's an added step. It's a cost. It may be no better than what we have with people reporting whether they have a fever. We need to create data from data. And in Boston, we have a requirement about homelessness for a disparities project, and we asked hospitals to do a little checkbox that said that the person was homeless. And after receiving millions of records, we went back and looked. Was it there? Surprise, nobody checked the box. It's not within their business processes for the registration staff. But if you use addresses in Boston that are addresses for homeless shelters, there were thousands and thousands of visits. So we would have been better served not asking a change in the system, but thinking about how we could map existing addresses that we were receiving to homeless and congregate settings to better define that. So if you think about this in another way, can you use addresses to define people coming from nursing homes? And you can. They'll give the address of the nursing home. So we need to think about this because we couldn't change a hospital or a healthcare system's business processes but we could do something with data to give us better information on a critical issue that we wanted to know about in the city. And information needs vary by the response efforts. And that's a critical piece. We need to ensure that what your obligation is in a response, that you and the people in the positions to make decisions have what they need. And that varies whether you're local, state, federal, tribal, or territorial. And as part of this discussion, it's not having these sort of pipelines that go, oh, well, this will go from the local program to the state to the federal government. We may also need in this process to be creating horizontal networks that allow public health systems to communicate and talk so that the people in decision-making authority have the information they need to have effective responses to address issues in communities. Lessons learned. We need a strategic data acquisition process. Sometimes you sit down with people and they say, take everything. Now, for disclosure purposes, I'm an obsessive compulsive person who hates clutter. And that just clutters these systems, and it makes me crazy. So to have a strategic process where we have data that is informative and useful and obtainable in a cost-effective process will improve us far along the lines than we've ever been before. Biosurveillance is much more than meaningful use, and we need to be more inclusive in our discussions about that process and how we're going to obtain that, and realizing that not everything that we want is going to be in electronic health records. Information needs vary by response roles, and most of all, understand the goals. Are we looking for event detection, situation awareness, or response management? It can be all of them, some of them, but know your goals and support data that meets those goals, because in the end, that's how we're going to measure success. Thank you very much.